Christians here from several places today, most of course from here in Moorhead or members of the Moorhead Church, but also from other places in the state and outside of the state. And among them, I just want to note Brian and Jennifer Miley and their children. Brian and Jennifer were members here many years ago, and they're back to visit with us today, and it's just so good to see them. But we've got Christians from different churches. So I want to ask you if you are a Christian and a member of a congregation, this one or whatever congregation you're a member of, I want you to ask yourself the question, how closely does my congregation approximate or recreate the what a church ought to be? How close to being what my church ought to be is my congregation? How close does my church come to being what a church ought to be? The Bible tells us that there is actually a spectrum of possibilities when it comes to what a church is and how closely it is what God, it is, how close it is to what God wants it to be. And so I want you to think this morning about your particular congregation and ask yourself, where is it on this spectrum of possibilities? So on one end we have what Paul said about the Colossian church. He said in Colossians 1:2 that they were faithful brethren. His assessment of the church at Colossae was that they were faithful, that they were doing a good job of living out what a church is supposed to be. On the other end, we've got the church mentioned in Revelation 3, the church at Sardis, not so good. In fact, Jesus said to them, you have a name that you are alive. When people look at you, when people look at the Sardis Church of Christ, or whatever location they had chosen, you know, church got to be named after location. So whatever it was, you know, the Main Street Church of Christ in Sardis or whatever it was, and people looked at it and they heard the preaching and they looked at the financial statement and they examined the teaching and they went to visit and talk to the people. Everybody came away saying, boy, that Sardis Church of Christ, they're awesome. And Jesus looked at them and said, you're dead. There's nothing there. How frightening is it that you can look like a church who's alive? Do you think, by the way, that that could be true of a Christian too? Do you think it could be true of an individual Christian that you look alive, but you're dead? But Jesus said to this church, you are dead. What does dead mean? There's nothing there. There's nothing good there. And then in the middle, of course, lukewarm. Not hot, not cold, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. Now, this is not a good thing. This isn't like, well, the Laodicea was better than Sardis, because what did Jesus say to Laodicea? Jesus said, I don't like room temperature food. And so I'm going to what? Spit you out of my mouth. What, man, what a... How horrible is that? When you pick up a cup of coffee that you thought was still hot, you take a swig of it, and it's room temperature. You don't want it in your mouth. Hot stuff's supposed to be hot. Cold stuff's supposed to be cold. Pizza is supposed to be hot. Coffee is supposed to be hot. Where this iced coffee mess came from, I will never know. It's supposed to be hot, like pizza. Very few things ought to be lukewarm. And Jesus says, when it comes to a church, I don't want lukewarm. But the fact is that every congregation, the Moorhead City Church of Christ, is somewhere on that spectrum. Where do you think it is? The church that you're a member of, it's not this one, the church that you're a member of is somewhere on that spectrum. Where do you think it is? You have an idea, you have an answer to that, but then my next question is, how do you know? How do you know? In other words, what are you judging that on? What are you judging that on? Well, I love the singing. Or, you know, of course around here it would be the preaching is off the charts great. But that's one. I mean, that's a thing. Okay, fine. But is it, you know, I have a lot of youth programs, or I like the people, or the preaching makes me happy, or I can be me, or whatever it is. What is it about, why do you look at the church and say, this is the condition of the church? What are you judging it on, is what I'm asking. Because according to the Bible, when we put all the evidence together, there are three things that God requires from a congregation to be legitimately a church of Christ, a church that belongs to Christ, right? Not just on the sign, but a church that actually belongs to Jesus. And those three things are, number one, doctrine or teaching. What does the church believe and what does it teach? Does the church believe and teach the truth? That's one. The second one is behavior. How do people act? Do people do the right thing? Not perfectly, nobody does. But is the church committed to doing the right thing as a group and individually? And then the third thing is fellowship. The third thing is fellowship. What are the relationships like among the church members? So turn over to 1 Thessalonians 4. And interestingly, in 1 Thessalonians 4, Paul addresses all three of these things. Now, the Thessalonian church was a very young church, probably the youngest church. How do I want to say that? The Thessalonian church was probably the youngest of any church that got a letter. So the Thessalonian church had been in existence about 20 years or so. And so after about 20 years, Paul has to write to... That's not right. That's completely wrong. What I just said is totally wrong. It's less than that. It was young, is all I'm saying. It was young. So the Thessalonian church was fairly new. And so Paul has to write to this church, and as you can imagine, he's got to deal with basics. And what he's going to deal with is these three things. And in 1 Thessalonians chapter 4 and verses 13 to 18, he deals with doctrine, particularly the doctrine of the second coming. And he says, we don't want you to be uninformed. We don't want you to believe the wrong thing. What we believe is important. What we teach is important. Teaching the Bible is important. And he says, I want you to get the doctrine right. In verses 1 to 8, he deals with behavior, particularly sexual morality. That's the topic there in those verses specifically, but he's dealing with behavior. And he says, I want you to be sexually pure. But he also deals with fellowship. This is verses 9 to 12, and this will be our text for today. We're going to talk about fellowship. Now, interestingly, three sections in this chapter, doctrine, behavior, and fellowship, all of them actually deal with fellowship. In other words, when he deals with doctrine in verses 13 to 18, how does he conclude it? Therefore, comfort what? One another with these words. Doctrine is to be used for mutual benefit. And when he's talking about sexual morality in verses 1 to 8, look what he says in verse 6 when it comes to sexual behavior. He says that no man transgress and defraud his brother. Do you see that behavior affects fellowship? The way that you act affects me, and the way that I act affects you. I had somebody tell me one time, I was talking to them about something that they had done, a hurtful thing that they had done, and they said to me, this is none of your business. This is between me and God. What I do is only between me and God. It has nothing to do with you. Now, we'll see that there's a place for minding your own business, but it is not true that everybody's behavior just affects them. What we do affects everybody to one degree or another. But fellowship is what we're going to talk about. Now, when we think about fellowship, what do we think about? When we think about having fellowship, normally we think about church, being in church. Normally, when we think about fellowship, we think about this. But it's not just this. And we're going to see that in this passage. And so 1 Thessalonians 4, verses 9 through 12. Let's read it and then talk about it for just a minute. Verse 9. Now, as to the love of the brethren, you have no need for anyone to write to you, for you yourselves are taught by God to love one another. For indeed you do practice it toward all the brethren who are in all Macedonia. But we urge you, brethren, to excel still more and to make it your ambition to lead a quiet life and attend to your own business and work with your hands just as we commanded you, so that you will behave properly toward outsiders and not be in any need. Three things that he says about love in that passage. Number one, love for the church is a requirement. Love for the church is a requirement. If you look up there's a lot of lists out there about quote-unquote marks of the true church. And a lot of times when you look up or you take a look at those lists, it'll talk a lot about external things, acts of worship, organization, that sort of thing, all of which are important. But it may or may not mention love. What did Jesus say about the mark of the true church? Jesus said, by this, all men will know that you are my disciples. What? The sign? Is it the sign? Is it the way we do church? What did he say? By this, all men will know that you are my disciples. If what? If you have love for one another. Love is a requirement. Secondly, love has to do with real life. Love is not pie in the sky. Love isn't holding hands and singing about it. Love is not kumbaya. Love is not, I'd like to buy the world a Coke. Love is real life. And then love is also rewarding. And so we'll see that as we go through. So number one, love for the church is a requirement. Look what he says in verse 9. As to the love of the brethren, you have no need of anyone to write to you, for you yourselves are taught by God to love one another. He says, I don't have to write to you and say in so many words, you must love each other. Why? Because they already knew. They knew that this was a command of God. They knew that Christians have to love each other. They knew that already. It is a requirement and they were aware of that. Now look at verse 10. What does he say about what they're doing with it? He says, you're taught by God to love one another, and what? Were they doing it or not doing it? Were they doing it or not doing it? What does verse 10 say? Verse 10 says, and you practice it. You're doing it. You're doing the love that you know you ought to do. Now notice what he says. Now look, if you were studying this at home, you know what you would do here. You know what you would do here. You've looked at context, you know all that, you're doing all the right stuff. But then you read, indeed you practice it toward all the brethren who are in Macedonia. What are you doing right there? You're finding a map. You're finding a map to say, what in the world is that, Macedonia? What is that? Well, here it is. So, if you look on that map, I can't ever get this right with that. So, if you look on that map, Thessalonica is up there in the left-hand corner, right? I don't know if you can in the back see, you see that? You see where that is? Thessalonica. And it's in the region of Macedonia. So it's sort of like Morehead City's in the state of North Carolina. Thessalonica is in the region or the province of Macedonia. Now look at what he says. He says, you practice love toward who? All the brethren where? In Macedonia. Now, is that good or bad or okay? Well, you don't really know because probably like me, you've never been to Macedonia. Some of you military guys maybe. But I've never been to Macedonia. I don't know if it's a square mile or 1,000 square miles. But if I look on a map of North Carolina, here's what, and I do a comparison, here's what I see. This is how big the region that he's talking, this is the size of Macedonia. So if it were North Carolina, it would be from Raleigh all the way to the ocean. And then everything up and everything down. Okay? So that's the size of it. So in other words, if he were talking to us, what would he say? He would say to the church at Morehead City, you know you should love each other, and you're loving each other. And not only are you loving each other, but you're loving Christians. Notice what he says, though. What does he say in verse 10? He says, indeed, you what? Feel it? Did he say feel it? Did he say you feel love? You have the love. What did he say? You practice it. So they're doing something in love. For Christians, for us, it would be in Raleigh, Kinston, all the way up to Elizabeth City, Wilmington. What else is in there? Maybe Rocky Mountain, I guess, might be in that, right? These different places. Now, think about that. Think about that. He says, you folks in Morehead City, you're practicing love for people all the way over to Raleigh, up to Elizabeth City, and down to Wilmington. That's what he would say. That's a lot of love. That's a lot of practice. What were they doing? We don't know exactly what they were doing. It could have been money. It could have been prayer. It could have been missionary. We don't know what it was. I have no idea what they were doing. But they were practicing love all over the region that they lived in. Now, verse 10, he's not done. You know you need to love Christians. You're doing it. You're doing it in your entire region, but he's not done. What does he say at the end of verse 10? What does he say at the end of verse 10? You can do better. You can do better. You're practicing love all the way to Raleigh, from Raleigh to the ocean. You're practicing love to all of these Christians, but we can do better. We can do better. Now, what is he going to say? Is he going to say, okay, look, you're serving Macedonia. But now, look, you need to get that down into Achaia. And you need to get that over into Italy, too. And you need to go all the way over into Asia Minor. So you're loving each other in that area, but now you need to expand that, and you need to be loving people all over them. That's not what he says. That's not what he says. What he says is, I want you to be sure that you're getting it straight right there where you are. He would say to us in Morehead City, I see you, Morehead City. I see you, Morehead City Church of Christ. You're sending support to Beulahville. You're supporting 3 or 4 preachers in Honduras. You're praying for Christians in Texas and California and Ohio and all kinds of other. I see that. But he would say to us, okay, now, let's bring it back in. Let's narrow it down. Let's bring it back to Morehead. Let's bring it back to Beaufort. Let's bring it back to Cape Carteret. Let's take a look at what, let's look at that, at the smaller picture for a minute. Do you see what he says? Look at verse 11. And to make it your ambition to lead a quiet life, attend to your own business and work with your hands. You see what he says? He says, you got love going out all over the place. But now let's bring the focus back in. All right, we're doing a great thing in Beulahville, doing a great thing in Honduras, doing a great thing in our prayers and the other ways that we try to serve and help other Christians all over the place. Paul would say to us, let's bring it back in. Let's talk about Morehead. Let's go out 24 and up 70, over to Jocelyn Trace. Let's get into Brandywine. Let's take a look at all that and see how we're doing. So here's what he says. Love for the church is a real life thing. Love for the church is a real life thing. Love for the church has to do with the way that you live. And he says two things particularly. Live quietly. Live quietly. And work productively. What does he mean to live quietly? What is quiet living? What is quiet living? What does that mean? Well, you know what not quiet living is. I would imagine if I asked you, and I'm not going to, if you want to tell me later, I'm happy to listen, but let's not do it publicly. But if I were to ask you, do you know anybody who lives a life that's not quiet? They don't live quietly. You would go, oh yeah, I know a few of those. I know a few of those, right? What characterizes a person who doesn't live that way? Well, there's some loud suffering. Some people suffer loudly. Some people suffer loudly, right? If they're upset, you're going to know it. They're going to make sure that everybody knows it. A lot of people like to broadcast their issues. A lot of people like to broadcast, make sure that even if it's TMI, man, they're going to get the I out there. Even though it's TMI, they're going to get it out there. Want everybody to know what's going on with them, right? Some people need attention. And some people want attention so badly, they're going to do just like little kids. Right? Little kid. Why do little kids act up a lot of times? They just want some attention, man. So give it to them. Let them have it. Anyway, that's another thing. So kids need attention, and if you don't give them attention in the right way, what are they going to do? Well, they're going to go crazy. They're going to act up. People do that. Adults do that. Some people cause turmoil. Some people like the agitator in the washing machine. You know, just all the time. Everything around them is always because they just can't let anything rest. You know, you remember how we thought this had really gotten out of hand with daytime talk shows? You remember Montel, Jerry Springer, who unbelievably was the mayor of Cincinnati at one point. Did you know that? The mayor of Cincinnati. Anyway, so we had Montel and Jerry Springer, and who else do we have? All those crazy people, right? We have the talk shows. And what would they have? They would have these people come on there and admit to the wackiest stuff. And you would think, who in the world would make that public? And we thought it was bad with daytime talk. And then we got Facebook. Oh my word. Do you ever, if you're not on Facebook, you know what I'm talking about, in a lot of ways you're better off. But if you're on Facebook, do you ever scrolling through and get something, you're like, I don't believe I'd have told that. I'm not sure why you'd make that public. Oh my word, the stuff that people do, the things that they post, admit to, talk about, the things that go on social media, just unbelievable. Because people don't want to live quietly. They want all their stuff out there, and they want it out there loudly, and they want you looking at it. That's not what Paul is saying. That. Paul says to live quietly. And he says, mind your own business. Mind your own business. Now, sometimes we've got to get in other people's business. We know that. The Bible says that. Sometimes we do. You know, in chapter 5 and verse 14, Paul says, we urge you, brethren, admonish the unruly. Encourage the faint-hearted. Help the weak. Sometimes we've got to get in people's business. But good gracious, not like some people do. Some people, it's like a full-time job. When we get in somebody's business, it should be rare. It should be rare. It should not be a habit. And it should be strictly for their own welfare. We need to be very careful about that. We need to think carefully. When we go talking about somebody, why am I doing that? Now, it's easy to convince, boy, we can rationalize that bad boy, right? Well, I'm just concerned. I want people to be in prayer. I need advice. Well, we just want to talk about something. So, it should be rare. We should not make it a habit. It should be for their own welfare. And here's the good news. There is a fix for not minding your own business. Because it's so easy to rationalize it, Paul said, let me give you a fix. Let me give you a very effective cure for minding other people's business. Work. Do something. Now, he might specifically mean, but... We don't need to limit that to saying to everybody, you have to have a paying job. Right? That's not what he's saying. He's not saying, you know, if you're retired, and I was asking, was it Bill I was asking this morning? Bill's been retired 17 years. Retire is sort of a relative term. I think somebody over there keeps him busy. I don't know about that. But he's been retired. I'm not saying, and Paul isn't saying, Bill, you need to get a job, man. Miss Jean, you need to go down here and get a job somewhere. He's not saying that it has to be a paying job necessarily. He's saying, though, what is he saying? Find something good to be productive in. Find something good to be busy about. Because if you, well, look at what he said in 1 Timothy 5. 1 Timothy chapter 5. Now, I'm going to tell you, now this is, a lot of people don't like this, and it's in the Bible, so I'm not going to apologize for it. He was dealing with a specific issue. So don't get wrapped around the axle. There's nothing sexist here. But just try to hear the lesson. He says in 1 Timothy 5:13, he's talking about young widows. And he says, at the same time, they also learn to be idle. As they go around from house to house, not merely idle, but also gossips and busybodies, talking about things not proper to mention. This is not that stereotypical women are gossips thing. This is not that. Because, listen, the men I know can put women under the table when it comes to gossip. Men are really champions at it, too. So this is not about women. This is about a particular issue, but just try to see the principle of it. He says, when these young women don't have anything to occupy themselves, what do? They start getting in everybody's business. So what does he say? Therefore, I want younger widows to get married, bear children, keep house, and give the enemy no occasion for reproach. It's just, what's the principle? The principle is that you need to be productive or you're going to get in other people's business. So the question, what are you doing to be productive? What are you doing to be active? That's what he's talking. We need to get that, because this was a real problem in the Roman world. Laziness was a problem in the Roman world. Edward Gibbon, in his book, a definitive book, at least it has been, The History of the Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire, gave a lot of reasons why the Roman Empire fell. I'm just going to give you some of them. I'm just going to put them out there and leave them right there for you to consider as you will. But here is why Gibbon said the reasons, many of them, that Rome fell. A weakened military. A weakened military. An economy in decline, particularly high taxes and big inflation. Political corruption and instability. Foreign invasion. And hedonism. And by that he meant, his idea was a decline in civic virtue, which he counted as a part of it, was a society where people had become wealthy and therefore could be lazy. They weren't doing anything. And a society that had become sexually corrupt. So those were many of the reasons that Gibbon said, the scholar, at least at the time, on Rome, that's what he said. I'm just going to put that out there, and if any of that sounds familiar, then it sounds familiar. If it doesn't, fine. But the point, my point here is that he said that laziness was part of the problem. Laziness was in Rome a problem. Juvenal, the poet and social commentator around 100 A.D., said, there's another plague spot far more sore, idleness, the mother of vice. He said in another of his satires about Rome, nowhere in the world can virtue thrive when idle men abound. Idleness is a problem. And so Paul says you need to work. This was a problem that Paul talked about in 2 Thessalonians 2. It must have been a real issue because he talks about it again. And he said, we've heard that there are some among you who are leading idle lives and not working. And he said to them, you need to note them you need to withdraw fellowship from them and don't feed them. Because if a man what? If a man will not what? Work, then he should not eat. So this is a problem. It's always a problem where it exists. The flip side of it is that when we love the church, so before we get to that, I want to emphasize this again so we don't miss the connection. In this context, Paul is talking about love. And he says in the context, the way that you love other Christians, if I love Jay, I love Jim, I love Dora, I love Karen, if I love Ty, one of the ways that I'm going to love you is by living a quiet life. Because when I'm a loud mouth, not in preaching, I'm supposed to be a loud mouth in preaching, you understand. I'm not talking about that. But if I'm a loud mouth, if I'm in drama, stirring up conflict, airing my issues all the time, that doesn't love you. That doesn't help you. If I love you, I need to stay out of your business unless you're in trouble. And if I love you, I need to work and provide for myself so that you don't have to. That's what Paul says. And there's a reward in all of that. He says that when we do that, in verse 12, to wrap up, he says, you will behave properly toward outsiders. Unbelievers should never see lazy Christians. Unbelievers should never see lazy Christians. That's what he's talking about. He says, when an unbeliever sees that you're lazy, their assessment of your faith goes down. So they should never see that you're a lazy Christian. And he says, this will help you not be in any need. Part of loving each other is living quietly, staying out of each other's business, and providing for ourselves, being productive and being active. Well, you can take out your songbook and turn to the invitation song. We'll sing that in just a moment. Next month, so again, Lord willing, next week, Isaiah and I will be at Carolina Bible Camp, so we will not be here. But next month, starting on that first Sunday, we're going to have a new series of sermons, sort of riffing off of Israel in the wilderness, and we're going to talk about the Christian's journey of faith and obedience. So we're going to talk about some aspects of that. Tonight, Lord willing, we're going to be back here at the building at 6 o'clock, and we're going to be talking about how the tabernacle looked forward to Jesus. What we can learn about Jesus from the tabernacle. So that'll be our topic tonight. We will be here at 6 a.m. So just a few questions to leave you with as we sing the song of invitation. Are you a loud liver? Now, I'm not asking about the organ here. Not asking about how your liver is doing. I don't care about that. I'm asking if you are a loud liver. If you live loudly. If you constantly need attention or try to get attention or try just throw your stuff out there all the time and you're always into things. Are you a loud liver? Are you a lurking listener? Are you a lurking listener? Aubrey, I thought about including the lisping lamb here, but I decided not to do that. For those, that's a blast from the past, from many years ago. But are you a lurking listener? Are you in other people's business? Are you always trying to hear what's going on and get information out of people and ask questions in none of your business and then go talk about it to somebody else? Is that you? Are you a lazy lounger? Are you a lazy lounger? Everybody needs rest. It's all good, right? Rest is good. The Sabbath was made for man. You get time off, it's cool. But if you are dependent upon other people to get everything done, if you are you don't provide for yourself, if you're not productive, look, this is not just the Bible. Scientific studies have shown that people who are not active and productive are more likely to be depressed, more likely to abuse substances, more likely to have relationship problems, more likely, obviously, to be in financial need. This is not just the Bible. This is real life. People who are inactive don't have joy. This is what's so weird about our culture, right? What does our culture say? Knock yourself out for 25, 30 years. Sock away all the money you can and then quit and don't do anything. That's a horrible way to live. That's a horrible way to live. The Bible says that it's only those who are productive and active in good things that are happy. And it's also something that's a very important spiritual principle. So as we sing this invitation song, Arby's going to lead this for us in just a moment. We're doing that. You're thinking about what we talked about. Or maybe you came in here thinking about something else. You came in here knowing that there's something else going on that you need to work on and get right. Whatever the case, if there's something in your spiritual life that's going on and you need help with it, we want to get in your business. No, I'm kidding. But we do want to help you. We do want to help you. We want to give you the help that you need. If you're not a Christian, want to talk about that. You're ready to become a Christian or you're struggling. We want to help you. We'd love to speak with anybody privately after church, or you can come forward and take a seat on the front as we stand and sing.